Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Charlotte Line. It's January 21st, 2020. We got a great show up for tonight. We got some news from Kingsport Speedway in Kingsport, Tennessee. Got all kinds of good stuff. First of all, I'm Dr. John, and I want to introduce Zach Beechler. Zach, how you doing tonight?
I'm hanging out, hanging in there, and hanging with it.
Well, that's good. We are glad to have you here with us. And Brady, how are you doing tonight?
You know, I'm really surprised I still have all my fingers and toes. It's cold as all get out up here in Iowa, and I just can't seem to find the heater that works at either my office or at home because I've just been frozen all day. So right now, just kind of bundled up.
Yep, I tell you what, it's cold here in Myrtle Beach. Zach, I'm sure it's cold in Green in Studio G in Greenville, isn't it?
I moved away from the cold and I still get it. I don't like it. I don't like it.
It followed you.
Well, just
followed you right on down there.
just head on down to Miami. That'll get you down there where it's warm. You might get a hurricane, but so what? Anyway, we've got a great show tonight. This weekend, Zach and I went to the Kingsport Speedway end of last year banquet. They say that they like to let people have time with their family and things like that over the holidays. So they like to do their end of the year banquet in the first couple of weeks of January. And they did. It was a great time. Zach, did you have as good a time? And the food was great. It was fun, wasn't it, Zach? Tell us, give us a recap.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. They, I think the biggest thing that I took away from the banquet is that it was a lot more, you know, we talk about racing as a family sport. It really was a family atmosphere. You know, there were kids there. There were some adult beverages had, but it was definitely a lot of fun. And we definitely got to see a lot of hear a lot of interesting remarks. I believe one of them was from a guy whose nickname is Frog, and he said, "I ain't driving Miss Daisy. I got two cars next year. I'll run you through the door." It was definitely a lot of fun.
Yes, he did.
And,
he sure said that.
And we even got a couple interviews from one guy who was from our table. He actually placed fifth, and he won Rookie of the Year. And then we got the track champion as well. Do you have those lined up?
Absolutely. First of all, here is Tim Hensley. This is an interview that you did with him. He was the Pure Street Rookie of the Year, and I think he finished, he finished fifth. So let's check out what you and Tim had to say there at the Meadowview Convention Center in Kingsport, Tennessee.
Let's try this one more time. I'm here with Tim. He just won Rookie of the Year and finished fifth overall in his class, beating
out the next contender Rookie of the Year, finishing sixth by what, 10, 12 points?
Yeah, I think it was about 7 points. That was my main goal.
Well,
wanted to get that Rookie of the Year title. We were able to do that, and in order to do that, had to finish fifth in points because, as you said, if I would have finished sixth and Jess would have finished fifth, she would have been Rookie of the Year, so they both kind of go hand in hand.
Now, you talked to us before real quick.
We're actually sitting at your table. We didn't realize we were, you know, sitting with a couple of people that were racing. What's it like going from, because you just told us that you're not going to be doing a full-time racing next year. You might do here and there. What's that feel like going from, you know, racing full time, because you did just tell us you're a pipe fitter. What's it feel like going from full time to a part time, and how much more fun do you think you're gonna have?
Well, I'm not gonna lie, running full time is a very high stress environment. You know, because I couldn't afford to miss one race. If I wouldn't have, you know, been in any kind of contention for points or Rookie of the Year. So I knew in order to do both of those things, or either one, even just Rookie of the Year, I had to be there each and every week. So keeping up with the regular maintenance on the car, not counting, you know, the stuff that went wrong. I mean, we went through three motors, went through a rear end, and a pretty small team. I mean, it's just me and my dad most of the time, and my father-in-law. So, you know, it's not like we had a lot of resources or help all available, you know, to come and help us a lot. But so I think going into 2020, main goal is just to have fun. I've been working on a friend of mine's car all winter, put a brand new body on it. He's going to be running in the sportsman class with 602 crate. So I think it'll go really well. He raced a handful of times last year, had a couple of top fives. So we've got a lot to build on. I think it'll be good.
So moving forward, still going to have fun. And this time you'll be able to drink once the race starts instead of waiting for your race to start. What's the biggest thing you're going to be looking forward to in 2020? You know, are you going to be doing any of the big races or just like Friday night, you know what, let me pull the car out for fun and just go have some fun with some buddies?
Yeah, with Dustin, we're going to run some races at Kingsport. We've got about 10 races at Kingsport lined up. We're going to run some in Corbin, Kentucky. They're opening up their asphalt track again. So we're going to travel up there for a few races. And we may even run some of the Southeast Limited late model with, you know, that travels around with the truck series. We may run a couple of those races, just really depending on what the schedule gives to us.
Perfect. Well, it's an honor to sit with you, especially because we didn't know who we were sitting with. This is our first time coming up here and sitting at the table. It's been fun, cracking jokes and just listening in. What's one thing, if people have never been to Kingsport, what's the one thing they have to do besides go to the track? What's one thing, like, what's the restaurant to go to, or what's the place to go to after the race where all the racers are going to go have a beer?
I think they definitely need to try out the Food City Race Night that we have. That's a really good event. It's a really good turnout. Also, the Mall Show coming up February 15th. A lot of drivers work all winter to make their cars look great and take them up there and put them on display for a day. That's kind of good for the Kingsport area because, you know, a lot of people in Johnson City, you get to catch them walking by and don't even know there's a racetrack in Kingsport. So it's a good, you know, it's good for the publicity of the racetrack. So, yeah, I think that's a few things they should definitely check out.
Get the cars pretty that way before the first race starts. There's no tire marks on it.
Yeah.
John, you got any questions?
Yes, I do. The single most important thing in Corbin, Kentucky, other than racing, is what? Do you know the answer?
No idea.
That is the home of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And they've got that first restaurant still up and running. So maybe we'll come up there and see you at the Kentucky Fried Chicken in Corbin, Kentucky.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Zach. That was a good interview. And then we have, you got anything you want to say or comment about Tim before we move on to the next one?
Yeah, it was really fun because we sat, because we really didn't reserve a seat at the banquet, we kind of just showed up. We sat between two different racers. Tim was finished fifth, like he said, and finished Rookie of the Year. It was funny because you nudged me as he was making his speech up there. He's like, we should get him to do an interview with him. I'm like, yeah, that works. And him and his wife, and I think his father and mother there, which was really cool. And just like I said, sitting down at the table, them chopping up jokes and us listening in and talking to them was a lot of fun.
Really was. A lot of friendly people there, and they made us feel at home. They certainly did. Well, now the man that did it all. His name is Nick Williams, and he took the gold, silver, platinum, and everything else in late model sports cars. He was the king of the Kingsport Speedway. That's funny, yeah. Okay, so let's check out that interview that Zach did with Nick Williams.
I'm here with the Concrete Jungle King. The crown is on the car, the trophy, everything is here. Nick Williams, winner at the Kingsport Motor Speedway. Nick, congratulations. How does it feel?
I'm blessed to be here. It feels great. I always wanted to be a track champion at Kingsport. I always dreamed of it, and we worked hard this year, and here we are.
Now, it's interesting. You got on stage. You said your goal for this year was to win a track championship. You did that. Obviously, it takes a lot. You even brought a little list of the people you had to thank. You know, standing up there, seeing everyone, what's it feel like? Because as someone that's fairly young, you're probably younger than I am, what's it feel like looking out and seeing all these veterans, all your family and everyone, and knowing that you're a track champion at essentially an amazing track that has a lot of history?
I just feel accomplished because, like you was talking about that goal, we had a sponsor come on board this year, and he's like, Nick, I just want you to win a championship. So first of the year, we all got together, and we were like, we're going to run Kingsport the whole year and give it our all and try to get the track championship. So I just feel proud for my team, and I just feel accomplished and blessed.
Now, looking at the car, it's clean because you must have put a new body on, because racing at short track is not a clean sport. How hard was it this year? Not just staying clean for racing, because that's really how you win a championship. How was it that you were able to keep your mind straight on those frustrating moments? Because tempers get heated at short track racing, especially on a Friday night.
Oh, yeah. My team just kept in my head, told me not to get frustrated. There was some really frustrating times this year, and that's the thing about points. I mean, you take it so serious, you get frustrated, and it gets real stressful. But my team, my family and my team was just always there to just keep in my ear, like, be calm, be you, go out there and do your thing.
It is interesting because you are the track champion. Your plans, you didn't really talk about them on stage. I'm going to assume you're going to go for another track championship. But not just that, probably go for some bigger races as well. Is that something true?
Oh, yeah, that's true. We're going to run Kingsport full-time next year, run for the track championship and the state championship. And we're going to run Motor Mile next year full-time, try to go for that championship. And then we're going to run Martinsville at the end of the year. Just hope to make that race and run good and decent in it. And we haven't really decided on any other big shows yet, but that's still in the works.
Well, it's Martinsville being one of the biggest races right now. Josh Berry winning it this year. Leading every lap and getting $40,000+ if you listen to Dale Jr. talk about it. It's something nuts. So let's say you get to Martinsville and you make the field. Is your goal going to win or to stay clean to get a better finish because you know everyone else is going to wreck out?
Well, that's always the goal, is to win. But, I mean, Martinsville is just a different animal. If I made the race, I would just try to keep my nose clean and just stay out of trouble, because there's a lot of trouble that goes on there. You're getting a lot of wrecks. And you can just keep your nose clean, you'll get a good finish. And then the last segment, if you're still standing, like, go hard and see what can happen.
It is interesting to see a young guy coming up. You know, your goal really isn't to race full-time. It is, but right now you're like, you know what, I want to focus on this because I not just love it, you obviously have passion for it. I can tell just by your voice and the way you talked on stage and the way you were, you know, talking with your family and you know, taking pictures here. What is the one thing you want to do next? You know, you said you want to go for the state championship. Are you going to want to try to kick some butt, maybe beat, I don't know, some big guy named Rowdy Bush's guys someday?
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, that's been my goal since I was a kid, starting racing, is to get a shot in one of the upper series. But, I mean, if everything falls into place, that might happen, it might not, but I just keep trying all the time.
It is cool. Nick Williams, 32. That is his Insta, his Facebook, his Twitter, his Snapchat. You will see him at a lot of races, and there's a lot of talent for this kid, because obviously he's a track championship winner at the Concrete Jungle. You can't just get that on it. Nick, thank you so much. We hope to see you again with another championship, or maybe two, and I hope you get a grandfather clock this year.
Oh, that'd be cool. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Zach. Those were great interviews, and if anyone wants to listen to them, you can just call them on the website, and there's a link, or actually it's a button, and it'll take you right to the interview, and you can listen to them again and enjoy them. They'll also be on here when you hear the recap, when you play the podcast back, you can hear them there. So thanks, Zach. And now, what have you and Brady got cooked up for us tonight?
Well, one thing before we jump in, I just want to give a big shout out to Kingsport Speedway. They were very, when a couple of the people found out that we drove all the way up there from Greenville and from Myrtle Beach just to come see the banquet, they were very grateful. They said, they asked us how we liked it, asked us how the food was, but most importantly asked how we liked coming up there for it. You know, we got to thank them for the hospitality and for everything. So before, you know, we start the whole show, just want to thank them. And hopefully we might be going up there. Well, I might be going up there on the 15th of February to their mall show, which has a lot of cars up there. So again, thank you to Kingsport Speedway, and thank you to both the drivers, Nick and Tim, for the interview. So this week we are going to talk about some interesting stuff that has happened, including an announcement that happened the day after we had mentioned it, but I think we will hold that off and talk about some fun racing to come, including the Xfinity Series officially did announce, or I take it back, Indianapolis officially announced that the Xfinity race will be held on the road course instead of the tricky rectangle, I'm going to call it. Which is interesting because they're running it the same weekend as the Cup Series race. So, Brady, we had talked about it briefly because we had said Indianapolis Motor Speedway was going to make an announcement, and that was, you know, the kind of consensus that we had was, yeah, they're going to run the road course because there had been multiple sources saying that. Now that it's official, how do you feel about that?
Well, the first thing you brought up that I really want to touch on is just the logistical nightmare that that's going to be for them next year. Because like you said, it's not going to be its own separate weekend. They're running the Xfinity road course the exact same weekend the Cup cars are going to be on the 2.5-mile rectangle oval, as you so wonderfully put it. And, you know, just the difference in preparation for prepping an infield road course, prepping the oval, you know, making sure you got all the barriers set up. From a logistical standpoint, I do not want to be on that Indianapolis Motorsport staff, because trying to make sure you get all those barriers set up, get everything in place, and then take that all back down so it's not in the way of Cup practices or anything. I'm really intrigued to see how they're going to pull it off. But I know why they're going to this move. Like we talked about a little bit on the show last week, the attendance just hasn't been there for the Xfinity race at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And to be completely honest, the attendance really isn't there for the Cup race either. And it's kind of been the developing story ever since they first set foot on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Oval back in 1992 and 3 when they were testing, and then, of course, in 94 when they made the inaugural Brickyard 400. The stock cars just aren't built for that kind of a track. The track is super flat, and with those Indy cars that whip around there, they can go flat out on there, and they got so much downforce, so much grip, that they could just fly around that oval. But with these heavier stock cars, with the smaller brakes and stuff, you really got to, you know, get down heavy on those brakes to really get through those flat corners, to really get the grip, to really get the stick. And it doesn't lend itself to the side-by-side beating and banging racing that NASCAR fans come to expect from our Formula Motorsports. And so Indianapolis has always had to deal with that fact that it's really not been the best of racing. And we've seen some really great things in the last couple of years. They started with the Xfinity Series, and they've incorporated it into the Cup Series, where they've done different things with the Aero Ducts, with higher spoilers, with Baker splitters, you know, really kind of create kind of like a draft pack kind of racing style that we see at Daytona and Talladega. And it works so much more, you know, different than what those two tracks produce because of the flatter banking in the corners, that you can't just sail that momentum off in the corner like you do at Dega and at Daytona. And so it kind of created this kind of cat and mouse, you know, shake and bake, for lack of a better term, you know, style of racing, where you were really seeing a lot of slingshots, a lot of drafting. And, you know, the fan reaction was kind of mixed, but I personally thought that they had hit on something. And the last couple of years, the Xfinity Series especially, it was some of the most entertaining races I'd seen in that series, especially at that track. And so I really feel like they were hitting onto something, but the attendance just wasn't there to support them doing that. So they were looking to go, you know, make a major change, and they were looking at the success and the fan reception to the Charlotte Roval, where they were running the infield road course at the Charlotte Motor Speedway the last couple of years. And, you know, they're just like, well, we got to try something, because they want to keep the racing at Indianapolis Motor Speedway because of the heritage, because of the history, because for sponsors, like, that's a big marquee track. Like, even if you don't know racing, you know the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So it becomes a better sell for these Xfinity teams that are already, you know, kind of strapped for cash as it is, to market themselves, be like, hey, you know, would you want to sponsor this one race, this crown jewel event? So, like, I get that they want to keep it at those hallowed grounds. And this is, I got to applaud them. This is a very bold step to see if maybe this will be something that will work and maybe drum up some excitement, some intrigue around that Xfinity race, which has been very poorly attended. And maybe just be the kick in the pants that they're looking for to really elevate the Indianapolis NASCAR weekend to even the same ballpark as what the IndyCar Indianapolis race weekend is. They haven't really fully announced what kind of configuration we're going to go with. They have a couple different, you know, configurations, different ways they can shape the infield of the track to, you know, give out different courses. My gut is telling me they're probably going to be utilizing the same course that the Indy cars do for the Indy GP and the later parts of April, early parts of May, right before the 500, but they may pick a different course with some different braking points and some different, you know, different cornerings and as far as degrees and angling to try and make it better suited for racing with these bigger, heavier stock cars. But they have set up a scheduled test with experienced Cup driver Matt DiBenedetto, to try and shake down the car, shake out the course. And he's a professional road course driver himself and gets around those type of tracks really well. So he'll be providing a lot of invaluable information to them just to, you know, find out what works, you know, what doesn't. Can these Xfinity cars even take to that road course? Will they even operate anywhere remotely close to the action we're seeing in Charlotte? So these are all a bunch of questions that NASCAR is going to have to ask. But at the very bottom line, you gotta applaud them. They saw that something wasn't working. They don't want to fully give up on it yet, which is why they're trying. So a lot of fans have been complaining, saying, well, why don't you just bring racing for the Xfinity Series back to Indianapolis Raceway Park, just a few miles down the road from Indianapolis Motor Speedway? Because a lot of fans love that track. It was a unique little short track, and the action there was always top of the season easily. It was always one of the best Xfinity races, and the only reason they left was for that, you know, that higher profile track, you know, that bigger market, that easier sponsorship sell. And it really hasn't worked for them. And I know that they don't want to admit that, which is why they're doubling down hard on this, trying to make this Xfinity race at the road course work. So we'll just have to wait and see if this actually becomes something that they can build off of for 2021 moving forward and really pick up this Indianapolis 250 event kind of out from the ashes, as it were.
I do feel it is interesting because of that fact that we don't have, you know, it's not a solo weekend. It's a combined weekend. Now, one thing that we can say for sure is they will be putting up temporary turns and temporary blocks. So even if, let's say, a driver were to go off, you know, off in the turn one, they overshoot the braking zone and they go past, it's not going to really hurt anything. Because, you know, the configuration that you're talking about doesn't really have the opportunity for cheating, per se, in the first corner. They can put up temporary tire barriers and such stuff like that that are somewhat easy to move. It is interesting that we have Matt Benedetto, like you said, a really good road course driver testing. As of right now, he hasn't said anything about doing any Xfinity races. If he did, it would be for Penske in the 12. But we haven't heard anything about that, nor have we really heard much of him doing anything outside of just the Monster or the NASCAR season, I should say. One thing I'm really looking forward to with this is the fact that we're going to have a lot of different teams, like you said, trying to figure out, okay, what card are we going to be able to use? What is this going to be? How are we going to use this or that? One thing that I'm going to be interested in is seeing the smaller tier teams, like the teams I used to work for, BJ McLeod, and see what they'll be able to actually do or not be able to do, because they have road course cars, but this would be the Xfinity Series would be doing five races, because they do Mid-Ohio, Road America, the Charlotte Roval, Watkins Glen, and now this would be a fifth race, correct? Did I count right?
Yeah, you did count right. That would be five races for the Xfinity Series on road courses, whereas the Cup Series does the three.
All right, I did some good math today. But it definitely is interesting to see that they're wanting to do this. Now, I think that if you look at IndyCar for a second, they do run both the configurations. They run the road course, which also F1 used to run back in the day, and our good buddy Greg would be drooling for the fact that I mentioned that. But it's not. They're not running both races. They're not running both tracks at different times. They're running both tracks. One is one race the one weekend, and one is the other race the other weekend. So it would be interesting to see the outcome of both drivers who might even be ringers, you could say. There's been some big talks in a lot of IndyCar drivers wanting to do that race, including some Chip Ganassi drivers who sparked some interest, I should say. And even
and actually,
a couple of Penske,
I saw a rumor even today that famous IndyCar driver and likable personality James Hinchcliffe is rumored to be maybe filling in an Xfinity ride for a road course, probably more than likely this Indianapolis road course. So, like you said, it's now becoming kind of a crossover event where it's sparking the interest
of other open wheel forms of racing to take what they know, especially the experience that they have running the infield road course at Indianapolis, to this Xfinity event, maybe for its inaugural season.
Now, it will be interesting because this will be one of the few times we see a massive crossover from another series, from another racing series, not even another series like Xfinity going in the Cup or Cup going to Xfinity, a whole different racing platform. A lot of IndyCar drivers going to NASCAR to do that. This would be one of three tracks that IndyCar does with NASCAR. They do Indianapolis, obviously. They do Sonoma, but this one I think has more history behind it, I guess is the best way to put it, that there's more people that want to win at Indy, even if it's not the Indy 500. If you win at Indy and you're an Indy car driver, funny enough, you'll be in love because you still won there.
Well, it's the same way with Daytona and NASCAR.
No, you're right. Yeah, go with that.
Yeah, it's the same way with Daytona and NASCAR. It doesn't matter if you're winning a Clash event, if you're winning a qualifying race, or the 400 event that's going to be the cutoff of the chase. If you could put your name in the history books of winning some kind of race at Daytona and you're a NASCAR fan, like, that'll live with you forever. So it's just like you're saying with Indianapolis. Like, this, you know, presents itself as an opportunity for these IndyCar drivers to drive their way into the hallowed IndyCar ground, you know, hallowed IndyCar victory lane there, you know, and it'd be to say that you're the one that took the inaugural, you know, stock car event on the infield road course at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway would also come with a hefty amount of clout that I feel like would be definitely super intriguing for those IndyCar guys, especially a lot of names like that we've heard over the past few years, like Elio Castroneves, Scott Dixon, Will Power, drivers that race for NASCAR teams in IndyCar that have expressed a lot of interest in, you know, getting their feet wet and maybe seeing what stock car racing is all about.
I do love that because you hit it on the nail. You know, being the first driver to win X race is a big, big thing in a driver's career, especially if it's at a historical track like Daytona or Indy, and especially this one being the first time they'll be running the road course ever in NASCAR history, you know, running that. This opens up the door for conversation down the road of possibly – now, there's no rumor or anything, but this could open the door for the possibility that we could have two races at Indianapolis if this goes well, kind of like the IndyCar series does, which I'd like to see them do a road course with the Cup Series at Indy. And there's a lot of other tracks, of course, people want to see Indy run. Like, for us, obviously, there's Iowa. We always keep saying we want to see the big boys at Iowa. We want to see the big boys at Iowa. But seeing the history, and, you know, because the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is over 100 years old. You know, it's called the Brickyard for a reason. It was made entirely out of bricks. I feel I would want to see that more than some other tracks getting it. And I feel a lot of people would be behind me on that, not just drivers, but also veteran racers. Even people like Richard Petty, even Dale Earnhardt Jr. has said himself that he would love to see NASCAR go back, or NASCAR go and do the road course there, but he's also said he'd love to see more of the older tracks there as well. So if this opens up the opportunity for them to do more road course racing, I know a lot of people would be happy. If this brings the opportunity to maybe go back to that IPR, the Indianapolis Race Park that you mentioned earlier, which the biggest reason NASCAR doesn't go there right now is there is no safer barriers. There's only a handful of tracks that NASCAR still goes to that does not have safer barriers at all. Indianapolis has them in a lot of places, but if you look at last year's race, Brad Keselowski ended up in a giant tire barrier with two wheels off the ground. But, you know, like I said, that's one reason why NASCAR doesn't go back to those tracks as of right now. That can change, obviously, if a track is willing to do that. But I think the big thing I want to look at with this is Matt DiBenedetto, like I said, who's not running this, was kind of – I feel like this was out of the blue because Matt isn't running Xfinity Series at all, like I said earlier. He's with a new team, so it makes me think, whose car is he going to be testing, and will he be wanting to race that race now? Because Matt loves road course racing, and he is really good, but it's kind of odd that out of every driver, I would assume that we'd get an IndyCar driver maybe to do the test, or even an Xfinity Series driver to do the test, but instead we got a Cup Series driver who just moved to a new team, and by chance, that new team owner owns Indianapolis Motor Speedway, so maybe that's the reason. But how do you think this test will go, and more importantly, how many hours of iRacing do you think he'll be doing to get this to get prepped for the race?
Oh, honestly, he's probably spending countless hours on that sim rig trying to get the track layout down, because there's no better tool these drivers have nowadays to learn track layouts, learn braking points, and learn, you know, different lines than those sim rigs. So I could assure you he's probably spending plenty of time there. But what you were talking something interesting, though, about Matt DiBenedetto. He made a lot of headlines last year racing for Levine Family Racing. He was, you know, outperforming what that equipment was used to getting with some of their past drivers. He was knocking on the doors of wins, getting some top tens, top fives, and really just carrying himself in a good manner. He has a good head on his shoulders, very respectful, has a lot of respect for the history of the sport, for the fans, and that's shown through in a lot of his interviews. And just based off, you know, the performance he was having, the fact it was kind of an underdog story, he became kind of a fan favorite over the course of last season. And so I think that probably has a little bit to do with it. But you also mentioned he now is going to race for the Wood Brothers team, and the Wood Brothers has a very, very strong technical alliance with Team Penske, with Roger Penske, who just bought the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So I feel like when they were looking at someone to shake down an Xfinity car on this road course, they were probably looking, you know, in-house. Probably Roger was looking at some of his own drivers, and it probably boiled down to sponsorship commitments, you know, that they have, because with his three teams, Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano, Brad Keselowski, they all have multiple sponsors, multiple different obligations, so who even knows what kind of availability they would even have for this kind of test. Whereas Matt DiBenedetto, he runs for that smaller family-owned team, the Wood Brothers, and they've only got maybe a couple of sponsor obligations, so he's probably got a lot more free time, which is probably why scheduling it maybe worked out a little bit better. But he's also got a good prowess for road course racing and tracks that require a lot of brakes. He's a very smooth driver, very technical driver, and we saw that last year. He was outstanding on the two road courses at Watkins Glen and Sonoma, and he had a pretty good event race, if I remember correctly, at the Roval too. But he really showed that if he's given good equipment, that he's one of the best out there on road courses. So that probably was also, you know, a selling point for choosing him to shake down this car. But I also think from a NASCAR standpoint, they weren't going to just put, you know, just anyone in that seat. They probably weren't going to go with someone in the Xfinity Series, because they probably wanted someone who has just years upon years of racing experience that they can draw on. And they were probably looking for someone with like Matt DiBenedetto, that's raced for, you know, all kinds of different teams, all kinds of different budgets. He's raced for Joe Gibbs and Penske in the Xfinity Series, but he's also raced for really tiny teams like BK Racing and Front Row Motorsports and stuff like that. Not Front Row, Bob Jenkins' team, the 32.
Go Fast.
Thank you. I was like, I can't think of it. Something funny. Go Fast Racing. And every time he's in behind the wheel of those cars, he takes care of the equipment. He gets exactly the kind of performance out of the equipment that it will offer. And I really think for a test session, that's really what you're looking for from a driver, someone that's consistent, that will give what the car allows, you know, as far as performance, and is not going to tear up a bunch of things. Because the last thing you'd want to do is, you know, set up this big test around one driver, one team, to kind of shake down this track for this inaugural event, and then have some driver go out there who doesn't know what they're doing, biff it in turn one, bend up the car, and completely waste a whole day of testing. So I feel like that had a lot to do with it, but you also kind of were mentioning something else about this move that I really kind of wanted to bring up while we're still on the topic of the Indy Roval. NASCAR fans, since about 2010, you know, right at the height of the COT era, it was a really big pivotal moment for the sport at that time. You know, up until that point, a bunch of mile and a half tracks, short tracks, super speedways. whenever you ask a typical NASCAR fan, they weren't listing road courses back then. They weren't saying, oh, I love seeing the racing at Watkins Glen. Oh, I love seeing the cars at Sonoma, because the racing wasn't as good as it really could have been. A lot of drivers really weren't that good road course racers, so that didn't, you know, lend to a good on-track product. But through the course of the 2000s and, you know, teams focusing more on trying to build better cars for these races, drivers focusing more time in the sim race to make themselves better racers at these races, over the course of the last decade, we've really seen, you know, Watkins Glen and Sonoma jump from being the bottom of the picks as far as fan favorite races to being now like top five favorite races, must-see races of the year. And I just really think that as more and more teams and more drivers, you know, invest the time and effort it takes to really put on a good show for road course racing, fans are latching onto that. They like the excitement. They like that it's something different. And I feel like this is also kind of a reaction to just seeing the fan perception over the last decade change in regards to NASCAR racing on road courses. You know, the fan support is there. The drivers love the challenge. The fans love to see them struggle and do something different than what they're accustomed to. And I really feel like that also has probably given, you know, this change a lot of legs for going forward to try something new and maybe breathe a little excitement by listening to the fans a little bit and, you know, hearing what they're saying. And they're constantly seeing the reports at the end of the year that Watkins Glen, Sonoma, and now the Roval, when they introduced that a couple years ago, are becoming, you know, fan favorite events. And these are the must-see events. And so I know, especially in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of push for more road courses, and I feel like this is the step in that direction of add a few more right-handers, as it were, to the NASCAR schedule. And who knows, if it's a success, you know, they're looking at a big shakeup of the Cup Series schedule in 2021 when a lot of the current track deals are done. And if we hit a home run in July with this inaugural Xfinity event, it just very well may lend itself to becoming a two-weekend stop for the Cup Series, where they maybe go once to the same 2.5-mile oval for the Brickyard 400, and then they come back, you know, a couple months later and do the road course. So we'll have to really pay attention and really keep our eyes on this story as it develops, because it could really shape and really influence the direction that NASCAR heads in 2021 and beyond.
It certainly will be interesting, and we will try to – they haven't really announced a test date yet. More than likely, it will be during one of the big breaks in the beginning of the year, or even might just be like, hey, we're going to do a test this year. Wait, we're going to do the test. Hey, wait, what's going on? So one thing that is also interesting about this, because you had said it, Matt DiBenedetto is with the Wood Brothers. He's doing the Penske games, and he if you follow Matt on Snapchat, he actually posted today they were doing the first set of the Penske games, which is just a fun little, I don't want to say contest, but a fun little event that all the Penske drivers from IndyCar to their IMSA racing to NASCAR have some fun from everything, well, from video games to inflatable obstacle courses, and there was a ping pong table getting set up on the video he posted. So I will be interested to see what Matt will be able to do, not just in the Penske games, because he is a, well, if you look at him, he definitely doesn't look like a NASCAR driver. He looks like a football player.
He's a beat fighter almost.
Sometimes. Oh, yeah. But one thing that we should move to is, let's talk about the Chili Bowl, because that just happened this weekend. We talked about it for the past 2 weeks. And a big-name NASCAR driver, after 13 attempts, after 13, you know, tries at this historic event that brings in over 300 competitors, finally won it. Christopher Bell was going for number 4, but came up short, and Kyle Larson won his first ever Chili Bowl in 13 attempts. How do you feel about that, Brady?
Honestly, watching Kyle Larson, the elation in victory lane, just the flood of relief, I instantly thought back to Darrell Waltrip, Dale Earnhardt, Michael Waltrip, you know, these names of drivers that reached the pinnacle in NASCAR after numerous attempts. Because you think with Waltrip, he tried at the Daytona 500 for 17 attempts. Earnhardt tried 20 tries before he finally got that 500. And it was the same deal with Kyle Larson. you know, once you get past that 10th try, and if you're someone with Kyle Larson's talent and caliber of driving skill, especially on dirt tracks, the fact that it took him 13 times to win one of the most sacred dirt track sprint car events, you know, of all time, it's just astounding. And so seeing him, you know, just take it all in, relish that moment, relish that victory, that's exactly where my mind went. I was getting flashbacks to those very pivotal moments in NASCAR, just seeing someone who's poured his entire heart and soul into dirt racing because he loves it to his very core and has tried everything he can to excel at their crown jewel event, like their big ticket marquee event, and to just come up short year after year to see something go wrong or something go awry and keep him from victory. It was so gratifying to see him finally, you know, summit that top, finally get that gold driller and make all those heartbreaks worth it, make all those shortcomings, all those tough years worth the journey, because he was finally able to capture that elusive victory. It was kind of like also, you know, just a few years ago when he took his first win at the Eldora Truck Race, because I think he won the fourth event, if I remember correctly, but he was right there in fourth or fifth. He was right there in the thick of things those first 3 years, but he'd either knock down the wall, have a flat tire, maybe get spun while second. Something would come up that would keep him from winning that Eldora Dirt Derby for the Truck Series. And it was kind of, it's not the same scope, but it was that similar elation, that similar relief on his face in victory lane back then in 2016 is what we were seeing last Saturday night. Just that, man, finally, I got that monkey off my back. I told you guys, dirt's my thing. I can race dirt with the best of them, and now I finally proved it. I've got that gold driller. It's coming home with me. It's going to sit front and center in my trophy case, and people will know that I'm not just some run-of-the-mill dirt racer. I am a Chili Bowl champion. And that's got to be a momentum that he's probably going to be completely honest, he'll probably ride that momentum all 2020 into his NASCAR campaign, because I don't know. I've never personally had a monumental moment in my life that has brought me that much relief and joy at the same time. But just seeing that visible expression on his face of just how much it meant to him, you can bet this win is going to stick with him for the rest of his life just because of how much it meant to him.
It definitely is interesting because he is, you know, a young guy. He, like I said, he did his first attempt 13 years ago. He wasn't even considering, you know, doing NASCAR. It wasn't really stuff on his radar just yet. He was just a young guy trying to race, really. And he finally, after 13 years, finally wins it and said something that was a little odd. We'll get to that in a second. But I do love the momentum that he's going to carry, because, like you said, that he kind of got that monkey off his back. He finally got the big win. You know, he first started the Chili Bowl at the age of 14, and there's not a lot of people who go from age 14 and for 13 years straight will go and try and win a race. excuse me, and did that momentum to definitely be a good thing for him, because the moment he won his first race at Michigan, it was his 99th start. He finally won that. The next year he won two more races, and he's been winning races on the regular, you know, at least once per season ever since then. Finally winning that dirt race, the Eldora Dirt Mud Summer Classic is what they call it now. And now this, it feels like he's, you know what, he has the comfortability. I'm going to just go for it as much as I can. Now, he made a comment about this, about winning the Chili Bowl. And he said something along the lines, I'm going to try to pull it up.
I think essentially along the lines was, man, this feels so good right now. This means more to me than winning at Daytona would. I think it was something along the lines of that was what the quote was.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there's been some backlash, like you say. Here's the quote. I'm sorry, NASCAR. I'm sorry, Daytona, but the biggest effing race I've ever won. Now, for Kyle, obviously, like you said earlier, he had been trying. like we said, you've been trying to get this race done and win for 13 years. You have drivers like Dale Earnhardt and Darrell Waltrip go for this race, go for the Daytona 500, I should say, and go over a decade plus without winning it. And it's not like they never came close. Multiple times they'd come close, just come up short. And with him winning this, he feels like he's already won the Daytona 500. And Dale Jr. had said something that said, you know what, the moment you do win that, you'll be able to feel what the actual, like, celebration, that feeling is. And some people said he's, you know, not harassing, but talking down to him. But I understand that because it's something that you've never experienced until you're able to, if you're ever able to.
Well, and I feel like the whole comment just got completely blown out of proportion. Myself, in particular, I thought the whole story was asinine that we were making that big of a deal out of what was a pretty, in my book, understandable comment. But honestly, the whole backlash, the whole ire of that comment kind of, to me, brings to light a bigger problem in motorsports. To me, I, as a fan growing up, I grew up starting watching NASCAR, then when I got to a point where, you know, where different motorsports were starting to be put on television, I got exposed to this whole world. Like, you know, like, it's not just the cup cars you see on Sunday. You know, I could go down to my local short track just up the street and see racing every weekend. And the thing that's always baffled me since I was a kid, you know, and I'd start going to dirt tracks, or I'd go to the Iowa Speedway, or I'd go to, you know, different events, is just kind of how clicky motorsports is. You know, there's not many people out there anymore, I feel like, that'll watch a form of motorsports just because it's racing. I feel like, in my experience, I've seen a lot of people be like, oh, no, I'm a dirt racer through and through. If it ain't on dirt, it ain't worth crap to me. Or I race open wheels and road courses exclusively. Ovals isn't real racing. That doesn't take any skill. And I've never understood that animosity that exists between the motorsports, like, and how, you know, much trash talking and you know, talking down there is between the different motorsports factions. Like, to me, it's just asinine. I want to show up to any track on any given weekend and just watch racing. I want to see, you know, cars, bikes, or trucks. If it has a motor and wheels and is going in some sort of a circuit, I don't care. I'm here for it. You know, and I've got my personal preferences. I've got racing that I prefer to watch, you know, just like everyone else. But I've just never understood why there's so much animosity, especially in, you know, growing up in Iowa. There's a big divide in Iowa, you know, from what I've seen, between people who love their dirt track racing and people that love asphalt racing. And there's just not a lot of crossover there. And it just blows my mind that you can go to any track and just hear that. And I feel like that's where a lot of this backlash, a lot of this ire from that comment that Kyle Larson made is coming from. It's from that deep-seated kind of clicky mentality that, oh, my form of motorsports is better than yours, when it's just asinine if you ask me. But the other thing that I feel like got lost in that, you got to remember, Kyle Larson entered into stock car racing right around 2012, 2011. So he's only been stock car racing not even a full decade yet. He's only been making trips to Daytona since 2013. Like, that's not a whole lot of time, you know, for that to take on a whole lot of meaning for him. Because when he entered motorsports, NASCAR was the furthest thing from his mind. He's like, that's such a pipe dream. You know, me being a small kid from California, like, I'm not going to make it. But dirt track racing, sprint car racing is a little more attainable. You can do that on a smaller budget. And so, you know, things happen to work out his way, and he is able to showcase his talent and work his way into the top echelon of NASCAR, but he's not been in that top echelon of NASCAR or even a part of stock car racing long enough for the weight of Daytona to hit the same to him as the weight of the Chili Bowl, because, you know, 13 years chasing this one dream, chasing this one singular dream versus six or seven, you know, in stock cars total and only five or six in the big series of NASCAR, the Cup Series division. Like, you just can't compare those two. Like, it's not even the same thing. So I completely understand where he's coming from, especially if you also look at his statistics. He hates super speedway racing at Talladega and Daytona. He always, you know, through no fault of his own, manages to find himself in the way of the big one. And for a racer like Kyle Larson, you know, the kind of lottery, lottery ticket winning style of racing that you see at Talladega and Daytona, where it's not always the best driver that wins. Sometimes it's the driver that's the most lucky. That's got to weigh on a driver like Kyle Larson that is used to picking up trophies left and right based strictly on the fact that he was the better driver with the better car that day. And so I feel like that's something that's not also talked a lot about, you know, because for us NASCAR fans, it's easy. Daytona, hollow grounds. You don't bash Daytona. You don't mess with Daytona. That we've kind of become blinded to the fact that the racing at Daytona really isn't the racer's race that it once was. You know, back in the 50s and 60s, sure, a lot of luck had to fall your way back then, and especially even in the 70s and 80s. But 9 times out of 10, the driver that was conquering Daytona was the team that brought, you know, the best, the strongest engine, the most durable, reliable car, and executed the best strategy. And as we've kind of gotten away from that with the advent of the restrictor plate racing, where we're seeing more pack racing, where we're seeing these big ones, where we're seeing, you know, just the slightest mistake take out half of the best cars in the field, to me, it kind of has tarnished that legacy of Daytona being the track, the benchmark that really separated the men from the boys of stock car racing. So to the point where if you're an outsider coming in, it doesn't carry the same weight as maybe some other races that you've grown up watching, you know, and admiring and dreaming about since the day you were 5. And, you know, and if people want to take issue with my comments, you go right ahead. But I've been watching this sport probably, you know, longer than half the people listening right now, and I've literally dedicated my entire life. And I really feel like, you know, you can't let the love of something you love blind you to areas where it's starting to get weaker, where it's starting to slip up. And Dale Jr. also mentioned this on his podcast a little while ago, where he was talking about, you know, we really should be focusing on, if Daytona is our track, is our marquee event, why are we not ending, you know, why are we not deciding a championship there? And then, you know, of course, the people are like, well, you really want a restrictor plate race deciding your championship? To which he replied, well, if that's the case, the problem isn't, you know, the track. It's the problem is the racing. If you're scared that we can't go to our most grand, luxurious, beautiful, historic track to decide our championship because the racing there is too fluky, too, you know, lottery style, then we got a problem. And I feel like, you know, I'm kind of getting on a soapbox here, but I really drew a lot of issue with fans attacking Kyle Larson, because I saw some pretty nasty comments on Twitter, and to me, I just thought they were completely unwarranted and completely ridiculous. And there's still so much time in Kyle Larson's career. You know, if he, like Dale Jr. said, you can't fully grasp the magnitude of taking a Daytona 500 victory until that Harley J. Earl Trophy is sitting in your lap. And, you know, by that time, Kyle Larson, if he's lucky enough, picks up a 500 trophy, maybe it'll be right around that 13-year mark of trying, when, you know, as long as it took him to get that gold thriller. And I feel like if that's the case, we're going to see a much different tone, a much different, you know, a much different Kyle Larson in victory lane, because he'll have, by that point, he'll have had that appreciation for Daytona that he currently has right now for the track at Tulsa for the Chili Bowl. So I really feel like the whole situation got completely blown out of proportion. And I just personally think it's asinine that we're even having arguments like this, because in my book, racing is racing, but nah, we'll see on that though.
Now we know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, John. Yeah. What about you, John? You're kind of like the outsider's opinion of the two of us, of three of us here. What are your thoughts there on, if you heard any of the whole to-do about Kyle Larson this last weekend?
I really didn't. I was actually busy going up to Kingsport and working in Tennessee Bigfoot Conference and going to the Kingsport Speedway banquets. I didn't, and when I'm on the road, I know it's terrible. I normally get way out of touch my world, you know, in the things that I watch so much. It was really interesting that you're talking about the lottery style tracks and everything. And I'm a golfer. I'm an avid golfer, and I know exactly what you mean when they have the U.S. Open. It's at these course in golf, and they just trick them up as hard as they can, and they've never had a consistent series of great winners because they trick it and make it so hard that anybody the last man standing wins. And that's I know that syndrome from golf, and that's why you know they don't decide the entire season on the U.S. Open. It's stuck in the middle, and you either win it or you win it or you don't, and you go on to the next PGA Tour event. So I certainly understand that as a crossover, yeah.
And one, I guess, final, fine point on this before we can move on to our next topic, kind of also expanding upon my comments, kind of relating Daytona and Talladega to kind of that lottery-style racing. I spent this off-season, as I normally do, watching some old races, during my free time. It's just either background noise while I'm doodling or something, or, just full-blown watching races just to scratch that itch. And this particular off-season, I started with the 1979, the first full flag-to-flag broadcast of the Daytona 500, and I've watched every single Daytona 500, from 1979 through, I'm up to 1993 now. And to me, the thing that it's been fascinating about watching our big race, our Super Bowl race, from back in 1979 all the way up through the 90s, I could see, from the talking points in the broadcast to the, kind of the air of the cars, just everything going around in those broadcasts, you can see this, transition where back in the late 70s, early 80s, we're talking about, we're talking about Waddell Wilson, we're talking about Dale Inman, these really, smart head wrenches that are just tuning every last ounce of horsepower out of these engines. And, if one of these really high-powered engines can hold together, they're going to win this race, no holds bar. But, back then it was also a durability, race because, it's cool. You made this engine go 200 miles an hour, but can it last for 500 miles? So that was what Daytona was back then. It was finding the balance between raw, all-out, nasty speed and, durability and making sure these cars will last for that full 500 grueling miles. But then right towards the end of the 80s, mid-80s, right when they introduced that restrictor plate, I'm right now in the early part of the 90s where I'm talking about pack racing and talking about, bigger packs are starting to become the headlines and what we're hearing about in my broadcast. But and then as a kid, I know right around the turn of the decade, right around 2000, 2001, even in the late 90s was when we really started seeing big pack racing to the point now where they literally look like slot cars out there on the track where they're 2 inches off, off each other, which is exciting racing. But at the same time, it's a crapshoot. You just don't know who's going to win that event. Like you could have a complete no name come out of nowhere and take the event because half the field got completely trashed out in turn one. And so, I really feel like his comments are bring to light two big areas that NASCAR, I feel like, needs to take a hard look at themselves. One, in the quality of racing at Daytona and Talladega that would lend itself to even that statement being something that has a lot of credibility to it, but also to the bigger problem, at least in my opinion, that there's just way too much animosity and way too much bickering between motorsports. But who knows? I feel like that's a whole topic you can spend a whole podcast, hour and a half talking about, but we can move on to another event here. Unless, Zach, do you have anything more to add on that?
Ladies, let's calm down. I'm going to say this real quick about Kyle Larson. His best finish at a restrictor plate race was at Daytona, I believe. Second, he didn't start racing at Daytona until 2013, where he made his inaugural start in the Xfinity Series, 2014 in the Cup Series. I feel that once he gets more wins under his belt and gets that more desire to win that race, the Daytona 500, he'll have that feeling. I feel that we should move on to some rumors of NASCAR that's been milling around the past week and two now. Does that sound good?
That sounds good to me. Do you want to start with the Xfinity Series? Because I got the team chart, and I remember you were mentioning something about a couple new teams coming in possibly to the Xfinity Series next year.
Well, let's start with this one because it's kind of quick. Parker Kligerman, or as some people call him, Parker Klagerman, who was racing the 96 car this past year, not full-time. He hasn't been racing full-time in any series for a very long time. He announced that he is no longer racing that car, and the big report that keeps coming out and keeps it's looking like it's going to be true is Daniel Suarez, who was out of a ride at the end of this last season, going to now given to Cole Custer. He will be riding or driving the 96 car of
Scott Brothers Racing.
Thank you. He will be running that car full time. This will be their first time ever doing a full time season. But I think a really interesting thing is that they're going to be going full time season without even doing a half a season. If I can look up their stats, they haven't really done a whole lot of
racing.
They've
been part time for a lot of years. Let me get their stats up here in front of me. I think last year was the most races they've competed in. They were close to, I think, maybe like a dozen, maybe 15 races last year with Parker Kligerman. Let's see here. But, yeah, no, like while we're getting the official details, but like you said, it seems like a very rushed move because they've been a part of the sport now for a few years. Their first race was the 2017 Daytona 500. And they've competed in only 51 Cup races since 2017. So, I guess let's see, that's four seasons roughly. So, yeah, you're looking at probably about a dozen races a year as what they're used to running. And it's such a different animal going from a part-time, you know, basis all the way up to a full-time, full-blown operation because you just can't expect to be competitive, first of all, you know, trying to expand that well because there's so many resources, so many developments, so many tweaks, and so much time and energy that needs to be put into these operations that you just can't expect to grow it overnight like that. But I definitely feel like there's going to be some growing pains for Gaunt Brothers Racing and for Suarez, too. Even though he's a past Xfinity champion, he's won races in the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series and has shown just a wealth of talent, you know, like a lot of other younger drivers coming to the sport before him, like Austin Dillon, Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Joey Logano, we're seeing this pattern of drivers that have a wealth of talent that do explosive in the lower series, you know, that kind of stall out when they get to the Cup Series, where they just can't seem to get a handle on the way the Cup cars, you know, drive, on the way the horsepower is different, on the way the competition is different, and we've seen it impact a lot of big names like Ricky Stenhouse. He was a two-time back-to-back champion, and he's been racing Cup Series now since 2013, only got two wins, and we're seeing him get a career reset. Austin Dillon, another back-to-back champion winner in the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series, he also has only managed a couple wins in a career that started in 2014 in the Cup Series. And so we're really just seeing a lot of these younger talents, you know, struggle when it gets to Cup, and that's kind of what's landed Suarez in this ride. He started out Joe Gibbs Racing, you know, one of the best teams out there, then goes to Stuart Haas Racing last year, again, one of the best teams out there, and showed a lot of improvement, granted, in the jump from Gibbs to Stuart Haas, but not near the consistency or the, you know, the level of driving, caliber that we're used to seeing out of Suarez, and that's kind of landed them in this kind of last chance ride. Yeah, a lot of people were expecting him maybe to go back down to the Xfinity Series, maybe spend a few more years in that division, getting more experience to the stock car racing, to the NASCAR competition side, and maybe, you know, come back to Cup in a couple of years. But it sounds like from the reports that I'm seeing is that a lot of this move was necessitated but based off of his sponsors not wanting to step back. Because it sounds like Aris, which has followed him from the Truck Series all the way up to Cup, and even Coca-Cola is being rumored as being an official backer of his next year. Both of those sponsors sound like one to keep relevant in the Cup Series and didn't want to take that step back to Xfinity, which is what's kind of led him here to really his only option. Because all the competitive full-time Cup Series rides were spoken of, you know, basically by the end of December, so he wasn't left with a whole lot of options if they were wanting to keep Cup. But I don't know. I feel like they're going to be biting off a lot more than they can chew, but hopefully they don't base everything off of this first season and they give themselves a few years to grow as a team and as a duo
to maybe step that organization up to being kind of like Levine Family Racing, where we saw a big uptick in their performance last year when they made the alliance with Joe Gibbs Racing and made that Toyota alliance. And we know that Toyota Racing Development as a manufacturer really tries to keep their car numbers small. They only have this will only be their sixth full-time team next year, and that's by design because they want to focus more of their resources on making their cars the best they can be. And in their mind, they do that by spending the same amount of resources on fewer car entries into the sport as opposed to Chevy and Ford. So this will also be a good move for Toyota to give them one extra full-time team to, you know, keep adding on notes, keep adding that research development notebook to bounce ideas off of. And it, depending on how close a relationship they choose to form with Joe Gibbs Racing, could really help maybe make that learning curve not as steep as I'm right now picturing it being for Gaunt Brothers Racing as they're looking to embark on their first full-time year next year.
So between 2017 and 2019, they've had Parker Kligerman, DJ Cownington, Jeffrey Earnhardt, Jesse Little, and Drew Herring as drivers. They did the most races, really, in 2018 consecutively. They ran from Pocono to Kansas, and it's something interesting to say the least, because in 2017 there was a whole Jeffrey Earnhardt incident at Martinsville. I was at that track for the truck race when that happened, which was very interesting. And it's kind of odd. They have a best finish of 13th at Daytona, you know, plate race. That's no surprise there. And then really it kind of fluctuates from the high 20s. So it will be interesting to see what they'll be able to do full time. I feel like Toyota will extend a higher partnership with them for the year coming out, and hopefully possibly, and I do hope this, we'll see them having a little more tech alliance possibly with Joe Gibbs Racing. Nothing huge, obviously.
Right.
Other than that, there are some new teams coming from the woodworks, a lot of them in the Xfinity Series. None of them really there's a handful of teams that are doing still the big races, like in the Truck Series. There's Clay Greenfield. He's been doing a handful of races. He has no, you know, he doesn't really want to do full-time racing in the Truck Series just yet. And we also, like you said, the Gaunt Brothers, but there's also the 62 Beard Oil Chevrolet Camaro that Brendan Gaughan will be piloting for the four cup races. What teams have you found? Because I know of a couple. But what teams have you found that are either expanding or starting a brand new chapter?
Well, we can start right off with a brand new team coming in. I haven't heard any news since they announced that they were coming to the Xfinity Series last year. But it's called Our Motorsports. Our Motorsports. They've got the number 02, and they've announced they're going to have full-time driver Andy Seuss behind the controls in their first inaugural season in the Xfinity Series. And through posting through my Lego page on Twitter, I got, you know, tweeting back and forth with a member of one of their team, and he told me that they're actually buying a lot of the old cars and equipment from GMS Racing, which shuttered their Xfinity program at the end of the 2019 season. So we know they're going to be getting at least decently competitive Chevys for their first foray into NASCAR racing and the Xfinity level. It'll just be a matter of time to see, you know, can they get through those first year growing pains? Can they, you know, plant the seeds to build a nice, healthy operation and do kind of what Colleague Racing did back in 2016, where they, you know, just take little stabs at it and just slowly grow it up over time? I mean, I personally wish them well. The guy I was talking to on Twitter was really nice, and I hope the team does well and that they can attract some sponsorship. But again, not a whole lot of details on that one quite yet. Some other big news.
So Our Motorsports, they've actually been doing a lot in the ARCA series. They actually were at the test this past couple weekends ago. So they are new to NASCAR, as in Xfinity trucks and all that. They've done the ARCA series for many years and have kind of just wanted to be like, you know what, we want to move up. And instead of doing the trucks, they're saying we're going to stay in the full body cars.
And if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure Andy Seuss was their driver in ARCA for the last couple of years, wasn't he?
Correct.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so that's going to be one team I'll be keeping my eye on, just because I like to see new teams come in, and I really want to see new teams do well and, you know, diversify things up a little bit. So we're not just seeing the same old teams taking all the glory. So that'll be interesting to see how they do in their first Xfinity season. I've also heard some switching up, you know, for some of the lower teams like SS Greenlight Racing. They announced that in their number 08 that driver Greg Galding will not be coming back behind the wheel of that Chevy. And instead, they've hired on Joe Graff Jr., which this has raised a lot of eyebrows, because Joe Graff, to put it mildly, had a terrible – yeah, he sucks. His last year, he made a few select starts, you know, for Richard Childress Racing, mind you, which has one of the most prolific and – historic Xfinity programs of all time and one of the most winning organizations of all time in the Xfinity series. He DNQ'd, I think, one or two races in Richard Childress Racing equipment. Not just had a terrible race, didn't even qualify for the race. And the races he did qualify for, he was running mid-20s at best. So, I don't know. A lot of people were very critical of that announcement, especially given the job that Greg Galding did for that team last year. Galding, you know, for better or worse, had a phenomenal season in the 08 SS Greenlight Racing, and this was a team that was sometimes showing up to the track without a sponsor and just literally piecing together what parts they had to make it race to race. And this was a driver that got that team knocking on the door of a possible playoff berth. I'm going to pull up the standings to see where he ended up finishing, but, you know, he was right there in the thick of it, 13th in points, all the way up to the very, very end of the season, and really making a case to maybe unseat driver Brandon Jones, who was driving for Joe Gibbs Racing last year and almost knocked Brandon Jones out of the playoffs. Like, so the fact that they went from – they weren't going to, you know, keep Galding in that ride and build off of that momentum that they had last year – that really drew the ire of a lot of fans. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how Graff does and see if he can learn from those mistakes last year and put together a solid racing season. Some other big news and notes for the Xfinity series.
So with that, SS Greenlight is still fielding two cars. It's going to be the 07 and 08. Like I said, Joe Graff Jr., but it'll also be Ray Black Jr. will be there again this year in the 07. Which is interesting. We got two juniors and one team.
Right. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on. Probably one of the biggest expansions we got to talk about is, I mentioned them a little bit earlier, Colleague Racing, which has been a part of the Xfinity series now since 2016. They started as a single car operation and had just slowly but surely grown that into one of the bigger powerhouses in the Xfinity series. And last year we saw them expand to a second team part-time. I think they ran about 18 or 20 races last year with their number 10 Chevrolet, and then even fielded a third Chevrolet at Daytona last year for the July race, where they won their inaugural Xfinity race with Ross Chastain. Well, this year they're expanding, and they're promoting that number 10 team to a full-time operation to join their established number 11, and Ross Chastain will be the driver of the number 10 Nutrien Ag Solutions Chevrolet. It looks like Nutrien Ag on board for 23 of the 33 races, and then they also announced that Justin Haley would be returning for a second full-time season in the number 11. And it sounds like team owner Matt Colleague, who owns the team, he's going to sponsor the number 11 car with his personal company, Leaf Filter Gutter Protection, which has adorned the number 11 for pretty much every single year that they've been a part of Xfinity Racing. So really great to see that team is healthy and growing, and they've even announced that they're going to make their first attempt at a cup race with the Daytona 500 here in a couple weeks with Justin Haley. So, for me, I love seeing a team that not only has started within the last few years, but has seen a lot of success and just continue to grow. So I wish them well in their 2020 endeavors. One of the biggest things I want to get your thoughts on, or see if you've heard anything, is Joe Gibbs Racing has announced for next year that their three teams, the number 18, 19, and 20, they're all going to be full-time teams competing for the Xfinity Series Drivers' Championship. Where usually that number 18 is kind of their all-star car, where they usually let Kyle Busch drive it for the max amount of races he can, get Denny Hamlin in for a couple races, and then maybe use that as their development car, where they give like a rookie driver one or two races to kind of see what they can do. But the fact that they're going to take that all-star racing team, that number 18, and make it a full-time team for Riley Herbst, Brandon Jones going to drive the 19, and then Harrison Burton going to move up from the trucks to take over the 20 car, that kind of has to beg the question, do we see Joe Gibbs Racing fielding a fourth part-time entry? Because Kyle Busch has stated he intends to run the Xfinity Series races at least until he can get to 100 wins. So have you heard anything through the pipelines on whether or not they're going to try and field a fourth entry for Gibbs?
I haven't heard much, but I believe that we are still I feel like it depends on what races Kyle wants to do. Then fielding a fourth car wouldn't be out of the question, because they somewhat do have the resources for it. It would just be something that would probably be done. It's surprising we haven't heard anything yet. I'll say it like this: we haven't found anything yet that they're going to be doing a partial fourth car or this or that. But also, it could be something where Kyle is going to be more focused on getting more wins in the trucks, that he's only going to select one or two races in Xfinity, or even possibly run his own car. He did run an Xfinity or a nationwide program from his organization, which only got one win with Parker Kligerman. So it's
Kurt Busch.
I haven't heard much, huh?
The one went to Kyle Busch Motorsports. We came for Kurt Busch.
Kurt Busch, you're right. I don't know what I was thinking there. But, yeah, I haven't heard much, but it wouldn't be too much of a surprise if they did a fourth car for two or three races and they just haven't announced it just yet, or if there could be something they're trying to work on to do another satellite team possibly. One team I haven't heard you mention, I don't know how many more you have, there's one I've seen them earlier. Let me try to find them again. How many more teams do you have on there?
Well, I got a couple more big teams I'll talk about while you're pulling that up. The defending Cup Series organization, I just mentioned them a little bit ago. Not Cup Series, the defending Xfinity Series organization, Richard Childress Racing, I just mentioned them a little bit ago. They have been kind of mull about their Xfinity operation plans for next year. They have announced that they're going to field the number 21 car full-time for Richard Childress Racing, and they're going to see a rotating cast of drivers. Myatt Snyder has been announced, and Anthony Alfredo. They've been announced for at least about 10 or 12 races apiece, and then it sounds like Austin Dillon is expected to run a couple races. So that's kind of become their driver development team for Richard Childress Racing. But the biggest surprise for that team is their championship ride, the number 2 Chevrolet. It doesn't sound like it's going to be on track next year. I don't think they've got a driver really in their development program that's ready for a full-time Xfinity Series schedule, nor do they have really any sponsorship coming their way, which is, to me, super surprising that they weren't able to, fish away a development driver from another rival organization or from another manufacturer, because that is one of the most competitive rides in the Xfinity Series, and the fact that it's going to go vacant this year, it kind of surprises me. There's still plenty of time to see if there might be a late minute announcement, but as far as I know, there's not going to be any racing from the number 2 Chevrolet out of RCR. We've also not heard really anything from Team Penske for their 2020 Xfinity plans. The belief is that Austin Cindric will return to the number 22 Ford for the full-time season, and that they'll probably bring back the 12 car for a few, random races with Brad Keselowski, Ryan Blaney, and their cup drivers. But the fact that we haven't really heard anything concrete, one's got to kind of wonder. I mean, I thought personally Austin Cindric had a great, season with them last year, his first full-time season with Penske in the Xfinity Series, and had a lot to build on for 2020 to maybe make a possible championship run. So I'll definitely be keeping my ears down to the pavement, trying to listen for any news on that, because it really would surprise me if they didn't continue that organization. And then Stuart Haas Racing.
I will say this on the Penske one, a little insight if you keep up with it. I mentioned earlier the Penske games. Austin Cindric was at the photo shoot with Matt DiBenedetto and was in it. So I feel pretty confident that they're going to have at least him in there full time. And having the 12 car will not be a huge surprise if they don't have that, if they do have that come back.
Exactly. And then just one last team I'll hit on for the Xfinity Series as far as big teams go. Stewart Haas Racing, of course, they had the two cars last year, the 00 and the 98, with Cole Custer and with Chase Briscoe, respectively. They've already announced that Cole Custer was moving on. He was leaving the number 00 team. He's going to go run full-time in the 41 Cup Series car for Stewart Haas. And so they haven't announced any plans, and I think the belief and what everyone expects is that they're not going to run the 00 car next year. But they did confirm today that they will be fielding the number 98 car full-time for Chase Briscoe, as he'll be competing in his second season for Stewart Haas Racing. They also announced a brand new sponsor for that team. High Point IT Development will be sponsoring that number 98 Ford for 10 races next year. And Briscoe also, really towards the end of the season, was really starting to come into his own and really starting to figure the cars out, figure out how to drive them. So I feel like he'll be in for a really good season. It'll be interesting to see what he can do. But now that he's got that backing and got the security of knowing, he'll at least be behind the wheel of that Ford for another season.
Exactly. So there's two smaller teams that have announced in the Xfinity Series. One of them is Gunter Racing, who ran more K&N stuff. They ran one race last year, and that was Homestead, just so that he could get his license essentially to run at Daytona. They are going to be fielding, as of right now, a full-time car, the number 26 Toyota, which will be interesting to see. And then Martin, I'm going to try to get this right, Martin Motorsports, who Tommy Joe Martin, if you don't know who he is a race car driver that had some, I'm going to say some interesting moments in his race career. Martin's Motorsports is what it is. It'll be fielding the 44 Chevrolet throughout the year. But one of their biggest moments that ever happened really was, well, if you were at the Iowa Speedway one year, him and the 02 car, or the 02 truck, I'm taking it back, got into it, and I had to hold him, his crew chief, and the truck owner back from going over to the 02 truck and going to fight them.
Oh, my. Oh, yeah, I remember you telling me about that. I forgot that was Tommy Joe in that story. Huh.
But they'll be fielding the 44 with a lot of sponsors, one of them being Guess Jeans, who's been a sponsor and partner with him for many of years. They just announced a new line of sponsors. Gunther Farms will be sponsoring, and AAN Adjustments will be sponsoring them as well for 25 races. So a lot of teams coming up. No big ones, obviously, in the Cup Series. There's some in the Truck Series, but we haven't really heard much about them, if they're going to be full-time or part-time.
Before we move on to the Truck Series, I did want to highlight one other one that I just now saw, and I hadn't heard anything about this, but this will be a team that you're familiar with, Zach. It sounds like your boy Mike Harmon is expanding his operation next year to a two-car team. They haven't released any details on it, but any of you who have seen your any given Xfinity race, you're probably used to seeing the all black, you know, with the bright orange number 74 numbered. It was a Dodge for many years, but now since they phased out the Dodge body, I think he's been running Chevys for the most part the last couple seasons. But Mike Harmon, you know, he runs most of the races, but he's been, you know, giving the seat over to younger development drivers, you know, getting them some seat time. They usually come in with some sponsors that helps that team. Well, he's gone on record of saying that he's going to expand and run a second full-time car, the number 47, so the inverse of his flagship car. But he's given no details as far as driver, sponsorship, or anything. So I'll have to keep an eye out to see if anything comes of that. But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if they actually field a second time for Mike Harmon Racing. Also, Ryan Sieg Racing, the RSS Racing team, they had a very, very good 2018 where Ryan Sieg made the playoffs and actually had some pretty good runs. Well, this next year they picked up a full season sponsorship, which they've never had in the history of that team. CMR Construction and Roofing is going to sponsor the number 39 for the full season. And with that added resources and a very, very good 2019 to build off of, I'm really going to be keeping an eye on RSS Racing. I became pretty good friends with some of their PR guys through my Instagram page and got to meet Ryan last year at the track and show him my my Lego version of his car. And it was really cool to, you know, see him appreciate the fan support for him being like a lower, you know, driver, you know, doesn't get a lot of press. And just seeing him outperform some of that high-end equipment with his family-run operation, I was super stoked when I saw the announcement that he got a full-season sponsor, and I'm really, really excited for that team to see what they can build off of after having a very, very fantastic 2019.
So one quick thing going back to the Mike Harmon, we'll have to wrap up. We'll actually talk about the Truck Series stuff next week, and we'll talk more.
Yeah, we got about five
Mike
more minutes
Harmon,
left.
Mike Harmon actually did field two cars last year with the help of Rick Ware Racing, so more than likely it will be a Rick Ware alliance with them doing a lot of stuff. They did a lot of the drivers that he had in the 17 car, which was a car prepped for by Mike Harmon's team and entered under Rick Ware Racing. More than likely, that's the partnership that will be. I'm not too sure if the 17 will still be active or not, or if it will be all Rick Ware, but more than likely, this will be an alliance with Rick Ware Racing as of right now. And Brady knows my attitude and my feelings towards Mike. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I know. That's why I had to bring it up.
Since we're getting short on time
and we're going to save some of that Truck Series talk for next week, one thing we can talk about in the Cup Series as far as just a small little news story, kind of building off our train of thought about alliances and teams kind of linking up to really, you know, bolster their program. Front Row Motorsports, which we talked about a little bit last week, where they were expanding now down to the Truck Series, they have announced that they are continuing their partnership with Roush Fenway Racing, where they're going to strengthen their technical alliance on the Cup Series side of things, where they're going to work closely on chassis setups, engine dynoing. They already get their engines from the Ford Performance Roush Yates shop and kind of work a lot closer in tandem than they have in the last few years. So it's really great to see that they're going to continue that partnership, because it's really helped Front Row grow from being just a start and park nobody team to now being a fairly competitive mid-pack team. And they're getting some younger talent in their pipeline, in their driver development. And if they continue working side by side with Roush like they've been, they might really build that operation into something special. So a really good announcement out of the Cup Series for that team to see that they're going to continue building off of some of the groundwork they've laid in the past couple seasons and really help maybe bolster their program going forward as they especially look towards the NASCAR Next Gen car and kind of the complete board reset that's going to bring to the sport.
For sure, and we will talk more about that along with the Truck Series. We'll talk about the next-gen car because some new stuff had happened with the test with Eric Jones in Homestead, Miami. But we are coming close to the end of our show, unfortunately, and that is a couple topics that is going to take a lot more than 90 seconds each to go over. So what's one thing you're going to be looking forward to this week in racing, if there is anything for you?
Oh, for this week in racing, obviously, it's going to be the Rolex 24 at Daytona. Like I've not been able to sit down and watch that. So this year I'm gonna try. I'm not super optimistic because I'm kind of a sleepy guy, but I'm gonna try and make it for a full 24 hours. My younger brother, who's done some racing himself and done some different driving schools and whatnot, hits his birthday next Monday, so he's gonna hopefully come over and we're just gonna make a big old party out of it, and maybe try and keep each other up throughout the night.
Well, I've told you I've done that myself. When we used to do a show back in the day, I did it one weekend, and I did it that weekend, and that was very, very tough.
Well, we'll maybe have to do like a Skype call or something if we're still up and if you're not free, you know, just kind of watch the race together, especially if Brenner bails on me and I end up watching it by myself.
Yeah.
Well, guys,
is there anything on your radar this weekend?
We're about to head out of you, Zach. What you got?
24 hours Daytona. That is the biggest thing that's going to happen for racing this weekend. There are some tests at Myrtle Beach this weekend as well for the Truck Series, but I believe that is already wrapped up. That's it.
All right.
All right. Dr. John, take us away.
We'll see everybody next week on the Charlotte Line, 10 p.m. Tuesdays. A lot of exciting things happening. So see you next time.
Bye, guys.